It's on now, thanks.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. We are here for the, today is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. It's 9:01 a.m. We're here for the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board, Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Barmore?
Here.
Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Ms. Ford? Not present as yet. Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac?
Here.
And Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum?
Thank you, Jan. The regular meeting item number one, approval of minutes, letter A, regular meeting held February 26, 2026. Any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding the minutes from that meeting?
Motion to approve, Barmore.
Thank you, John. Do I have a second?
This is Bill. I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the approval of minutes for the regular meeting held February 26, 2026 passes. Moving on to item two, Chief Investment Officer Report. David, are you handling this today or Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few comments to make, but I'll let Eric speak first and provide the performance update.
Great. Thank you, David. Good morning, Eric. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. The fund ended the month of February with a value of $6.74 billion. The fund return of 1.7% net of fees outperformed by approximately 33 basis points. The main relative performance drivers, public equity style bias added 41 basis points, and small cap value and international all went in our favor. Within manager selection, the DFA strategies collectively added 14 basis points. And then partially offsetting that within our, what we're now calling private real estate, if you'll remember, we terminated principal at the beginning of February. Their benchmark is a part of the private real estate benchmark, and that'll continue until the end of the quarter because we, you know, we set the policy to change that benchmark at the end of the quarter, which meant we had some style bias within that asset class this month. So that underweight to the principal benchmark detracted 19 basis points. You can see in the table to the right that the fund is underperforming over the 1 and 20 year periods while outperforming or in line in all other time periods. As of March 24th, you know, obviously, markets have been have pulled back based on you know, uncertainty with the war in Iran. The fund is down about 3.4% month to date, which brings us to essentially flat year to date, and the fund value to $6.51 billion. 7 out of the fund's 12 active mandates are outperforming year to date, and the public equity asset class and total fund are exceeding their respective benchmarks year to date net of fees. Year to date, we've seen a change in the value of investments of $7.1 million, received contributions of $213.5 million, and paid out benefits and expenses of $86.2 million. Benefits this month will be paid from the fund's cash balance. And then I do have one correction to note from what went out in the board package on the cash flow statement page that we send out every month. There was a formula error, which meant that we were showing a $4.2 million contribution to AQR in March. That was erroneous. I apologize for missing that. But so no withdrawals, no contributions in March. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions for Eric? All right, David, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have a few comments to make. First off, I just want to remind everybody of our Yeah, we'll stay there. Yeah, I'll queue up, Terry, for that. Thank you. I want to give everybody a heads up on the April 16th Investment Committee meeting that's coming up in a few weeks. It's a really important meeting as we're doing our fixed income. We're going to be interviewing our core fixed income manager search finalists there. I think we've asked everybody to set aside from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. that day. And we've asked all the managers to come in and actually present, give their interviews and present in person. It would be great to have the majority, if not all of you, all of the committee there in person as well. This is a really important decision. If you look at our active managers for fixed income, we've had Loomis since the early 80s. We've had Reams since the early 2000s. With everything that we've talked about with de-risking and glide paths, the goal is to make a great decision here and have a manager that we're going to have another 30 plus years managing a pretty significant sizable amount of our fund as hopefully we continue to grow the funded status. So if you can all be here, that would be great. I think it would definitely add to the discussion. It's important to help hopefully add to help things go. Yeah, we're also planning on bringing luncheon that day. So after we do the interviews, we'll be having all that discussion in person and hopefully with lunch available as well. Any questions on that before I continue? I also just wanted to make some comments on with the funds in the market with everything going on. I'll point everybody to the two charts at the bottom of that slide that we have up on the screen right now, the ERS asset allocation. The ERS allocation is at the end of February, as well as just to the right of it, you can see our relative weights versus our targets. As we always talk about, asset allocation is by far the main determinant, driver of a fund's risk and return profile. And we spent a lot of time, as you know, with being intentional, evaluating over the last 18 months the amount of risk we want to sign up for, essentially, and how to optimize the risk and return over the long term using Cal's market assumptions. And while we don't have any control over what the markets do, especially during the short term time periods like this, we do have control over the risk we take. And you'll see, looking at our target allocations, I think they were definitely within the spirit of the risk and return targets we've collectively adopted. I want to point out in particular the fixed income allocation of 35.9% in that 3.9% overweight target. This is by far the biggest risk dampener we can put in the portfolio. Our target is 32%. Our guidelines typically have a plus or minus 3% band around that. If you remember at the end of January, because of the principal issue that Eric referenced earlier, we actually asked for permission to temporarily allow up to 5% overweight in fixed income. And you can see going into February, before the volatility really happened in March, we were taking advantage of the majority of that ability. So that certainly helped the fund in this case. The real assets underweight, you can see, is due to that as well. The flip side of that, we had a 1% overweight to public equity, 0.9% overweight to private equity. Private equity, again, we have to live with that because it's still liquid and a little underweight to absolute return. I think it's interesting, if you look at risk holistically, if you remember one of the concerns we had about principal is that they were about 80% stocks, according to their benchmarks. So actually, if you think about, we took away 80%, a allocation that was 80% stocks, we're already using up most of our overweight to fixed income. It makes that overweight to public equity actually, I think it's, if you added it up, if you offset the two, we were probably underweight public equity when you balance out what was in principal and what we have is shown as an overweight there. So feel really good about that. It's one of the reasons why our funds is flat year to date, even with this market pullback. Inherent in asset allocation is liquidity and fixed liquidity and risk. I talked about the fixed income being a risk dampener, having that overweight there. You know, we have plenty of fixed income, also provides significant liquidity as well. Us being underweight absolute return, private real estate, and just a little overweight private equity, as well as being overweight fixed income, puts us in a great liquidity position. After asset allocation, you've heard me say this before, is structure. And you know, the timing of us finishing that fixed income structure at the end of last year, I don't think it couldn't have been better, in my opinion. It allowed us to really have be intentional about the fixed income allocations that we have to our managers. We've already pre-funded essentially the over $200 million for the new manager search that we're going to do in a few weeks, and that's all in a U.S. ag index, so it's very conservatively positioned. We have $500 million in a government index, which is very liquid, and that's intentional as well. It's after cash. That's the go-to for liquidity. And you know, I'm very pleased with how Reams and Loomis are performing, our two active managers. You know, they both came into this very conservatively positioned. Loomis, relatively conservative. If you know, I mean, you would never expect them to outperform in a time period like this, but they did go into this conservatively positioned for themselves, which gives them opportunities to deploy capital on our behalf as they see fit. And Reams was very conservative, and that's why they're kind of in line, slightly outperforming year to date, so and doing all right in March. So from a fixed income structure, everything's very pleased with how it's going. From a stock public equity structure, you're seeing a lot of outperformance. We've talked about underperformance there the last couple of years in a very strong market, and now in a challenging time period in stocks like we're seeing in the last, well, essentially to start the year. I think the majority, if not all, of our current public equity managers are outperforming their respective benchmarks year to date. Well, they aren't all, but all but one or two of them are outperforming year to date, which when you add it all up, the public equity structure is outperforming, as Eric mentioned. And that's, you know, when we need the managers to come through for us in a time period like this, they are, which is, I think, very important. You know, I'm going to make one last comment. I put together something. Terry's going to put it up in a second. I threw it together this morning. I apologize. It's not the prettiest summary that I've ever put together, but I kind of had this idea just in the last day or so. I put this together this morning, but it shows our asset allocation in four different time periods: end of 2024. June 2025, end of last year, and then our estimate for February 28th, and then to the very far right. Those numbers are comparing the market values from 2/28/2026 to 12/31/2024, as well as the percentage of the portfolio, which is what those represent. So those, all the percentages add up to 100% until you get to the last column, and that, if you add it up, it equals zero because they're offsetting each other. I think, again, I was interested in seeing how this would come up, but for anybody listening, as well as for you, the board, I hopefully some of you find this interesting as well. But you'll see we're a $5.8 billion fund at the end of 2024, with $2.28 billion in stocks, 39% in our portfolio, and I think what's most interesting is if looking at the fixed income, how the fixed income and cash have changed over these time periods, and how the public equity has looks during these time periods. So if I look at public equity went up from the period of December 31st to June. It went up again from June to December, and then it went up for the first 2 months of the year. You'll see the really because of our glide path and our discipline and rebalancing in terms of paying benefits out of public equity during this time period. For example, we paid out withdrew $419 million from public equity during this time period for both rebalancing purposes into fixed income as well as to pay benefits. Because of that discipline, you'll see our stock portfolio has, our actual dollars invested in stocks have gone up about $200 million, even though our fund value has gone up almost $900 million. That I'm looking at the $884 million in the bottom right. Again, because our fund value has went up during this time period and stocks, public equity didn't go up as much, our allocation to public equity went down from 39.1% to 37%. That's the negative 2.0 you see on the far right next to, on the public equity row. At the same time, that other $600 million that the funds went up during this time period, it's gone to de-risk the portfolio. It's gone to better diversify the portfolio. We've added $427 million to fixed income during this time period. Overall, fixed income's gone up over $600 million in terms of assets, 5.4% change in our portfolio. You'll see cash, another $135 million. A lot of that is from some of the terminations we made, as well as the contributions we got at the beginning of the year. And then you'll see absolute return has gone up. That's just manager performance, private equity. That's just how our asset class has performed. But I thought this was interesting because you'll see that, again, our fund, it puts in perspective that our fund has done well over this time period. We're still in a strong position, and we've been intentional about de-risking the portfolio. And I thought it was interesting to compare. Even in the grand scheme of things, 14 months isn't a huge amount of time, but I think this is actually pretty meaningful, what we've done with the portfolio, all the decisions, all the discussions we've had over the last 18 months. It's putting into practice, and it's really trying to help us navigate a time period like this as best we can. That's my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions that's on anybody's mind.
Thank you, David. Any comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, this is Bill.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
David, as it relates to this kind of recent pullback that we've seen in March, has our style bias towards small cap and value, has that been favorable for us? Has it been unfavorable for us? Or has the pullback been kind of broad-based and uniform, and it really hasn't had too much of an impact?
It's been... So do you want to talk about year to date or just March in particular?
Well, maybe both. Take it wherever. I'm particularly interested in March, but if there's more to the story, feel free to add in the other months.
If I'm looking at March in isolation, it looks like style bias is detracting 14 basis points, for example. It's a rough estimate. Overall, our public equity portfolio is slightly underperforming in March. It's hard. I don't have a breakout of the international piece of this here. That's certainly very well could be a few of those basis points of the 14. Small caps overall. It is interesting. I'm looking at the data as we speak. The S&P has, it looks like large value has slightly underperformed large growth in this time period. Our small value manager, where we get a lot of the our mid-cap manager, a little underperforming like a core US benchmark. Our small value manager, maybe surprisingly, if I'm looking at the benchmark and the style bias, is slightly outperforming the core managers. So the small impact is isn't really noticeable. The value, slight detraction, international slight detraction. I think it is worth looking at it in context of the year to date, because it's been very additive and it's contributed a lot of outperformance year to date. I mean, in some ways you could, yeah. Our international small and value had an incredible start to the year in January and February. And even if March had, you would almost expect, just the way markets work, that nothing goes in a straight line. Like, even when the trend is up, it's a bumpy ride. I mean, so some of this was almost like, in some ways I'd almost say that the style bias is holding up better in March than I would have expected in the context of how well it did in January and February, because it is additive. It is very additive year to date. It's just given a little bit back in March. It's an interesting market right now, because I could paint a picture where there's a lot to be scared about, and I could paint a picture where, you know what, we're holding up really well, and if you think that this is just kind of a playbook where, I mean, you think about the tariff things in April, right? How bad we felt in those first couple weeks in early April last year. I'm pretty sure, yeah, that would have been the worst time to sell, right? And when you start to recover, when the worst is behind you and think you start to recover, you know, you want to be in the small and the value, right? And markets can really take off after that. If you think that this is maybe a more prolonged issue with whether it's because of the energy prices or the geopolitical, you can paint a pretty scary picture, certainly, where markets don't recover this year and has still have room to fall. And then to add all that on top of it, you had an overpriced AI story, arguably, going into this too, which you could say small and value will do better because of that. International, it's a little more difficult to say, but that's... Nobody would argue that large cap growth stocks are still cheap, for example. So you still have that interplay as well. So it's really hard to predict going forward. But it has been additive, even with a very small pullback in March from style bias.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's a small sample size and still a lot of unknowns as to how things will play out. But that's, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem.
Thank you, Bill. David, any other comments or questions for David? Hearing any? Again, thank you, Eric and David. We'll move on to item number 3, administration and op committee reports. And go ahead, Bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a brief and efficient administration and operations committee meeting. First item was the election of the vice chair, which Mr. DeClean was elected vice chair. Congratulations, Justin. We recommended for approval the closeout of the 2025 budget after a presentation from Dan. We heard from Pat on a change of vendor for the retired public safety officer insurance premium deduction program, which was also recommended for approval. And we had a closed session discussion to consider, discuss, and potentially approve recommendation regarding the results of RFQ for actuary. And this item was recommended for approval.
Great. Thank you, Bill. I can go through the approval items as needed. First off, any comments or questions on item 3, letter A, approval of closeout of the 2025 budget? Hearing none, I'll make a motion to approve the closeout of the 2025 budget. Do I have a second?
Here.
Second. Chief Upton, any? Hearing none, I need a motion to approve the closeout of the 2025 budget passes. Moving on to item three, letter B, the approval of change of for the retired public safety officer insurance premium deduction program. I will make a motion to approve that. Do I have a second?
This is Bill.
I'll second.
I think I heard Bill for the second. Any objections regarding?
Mr. Chair, John Barmore.
Yes, go ahead, John.
Thank you for that discussion and motion. I would like to be on the record as recusing myself as I benefit from that program. And in fact, I was involved in setting it up, but it's a very beneficial program and it's a win-win for the members, and thank you for the support.
Thank you, John. And that will be as noted that you have already come decision. So I made the motion. Bill seconded it. Motion. Any objections regarding? Hearing none, motion to approve the change of vendor for the retired public safety officer insurance premium deduction program passes. Item the consideration, discussion, and potentially approval recommendation regarding the results of the RFQ for actuary does allow us to go into closed session if we have any need to. Patrick or anyone else, any need for us to go into closed for this?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Patrick McLean. There's a memo in the trustees' packets that explains the recommendation of staff. As Mr. Christensen indicated, there was a recommendation from the Committee of Approval. If anyone has any questions about specifics in that memo or any of the data that are appended to it, a closed session would be appropriate. If nobody has any questions, a motion and vote would also be in order.
Thank you, Patrick. Any board members or staff think that we need to go into closed session for discussion or any questions or comments regarding this item?
John Barmore, I had a question.
Go ahead, John.
And based on the answer, we can decide if it needs closed session or not. My question is, were the submittals ranked one through the number of submittals in the case of the contract being terminated down the road and having to go to number two or number three?
No is the short answer, and if you want to get into more details, we can certainly go into closed session to discuss it, but they were just ranked basically in order of the quote provided. So there wasn't any, there was some discussion of additional factors, but there wasn't a formal ranking based on those additional factors. So if there's, yeah, if there's more discussion needed about that, that's certainly something that I would recommend we go in a closed session for.
I would like to make a motion to go into closed session.
Thank you. Yep. We can go into closed session. Is there a second to go into closed? Well, let me go through and read the advisory statement first, and then we can do that. Please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following item, item three, letter C, as provided in section 19.85, sub 1, sub C, Wisconsin statutes, for deliberating or negotiating the purchase of public property, investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business, whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require action. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. So John did make a motion to go into closed. I will second that motion. Is there a roll call, Jan, please?
Yes, Mr. Barmore?
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad? Mr. Conrad? Is he on the line?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Kovak?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Quorum and the time, please.
9:31 a.m.
Recorder's pause now. Go ahead.
Time is 9 a.m. Let me know, Terry, when you're ready. Thank you. We're back in open session. Item 3, letter C. This is an approval item. I will make the motion to approve the recommendation regarding the results of the RFQ for actuary. Is there a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the approval for the recommendation regarding the results of RFQ for our actuary passes. Thank you, everybody. Moving on to item 4, legislative committee report. And Deborah, will you be handling that today? Good morning.
Sorry, good morning. At the special meeting we had of the legislative committee, we made some changes to the rules to clarify the role of the chief investment officer in terms of responsibility and reporting. And we gave them, we gave the chief investment officer, I think it reflects actual additional authority to execute contracts. That pretty much sums it up. Questions? Can anyone hear me?
Oh. Yeah, we can hear you, Deb.
Yep. Came over clearly, Deborah, just waiting for anyone to have any question or comment. All right, not hearing anything. Deborah, so these are not up for approval, correct?
Yes.
Patrick?
They do.
Straightforward.
They do require a final approval from the board per the board rules.
Great. I know it's not the listed, well, it doesn't say approval, but can I still put forward those motions then for item A and B?
Yeah, I think in this instance it would be appropriate.
Great. Then we'll start with item 4, letter A. Is there a motion to approve to approve the recommendation regarding amendment to Board Rule 2B6?
400 approval. Oops.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Oh, 100 seconds.
Oh, I heard a whole bunch there. I'm sorry. I didn't touch on the one.
Who was first?
Is that Deborah?
This board was first.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any. The motion to approve the recommendations regarding an amendment to Board Rule 2, sub C, sub 6 passes. Moving on to item 4, letter B. I will make a motion to approve the recommendations regarding an amendment to Board Rule 7, sub G, sub 2, sub C. Is there a second regarding?
Helling, second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections? Not hearing any. Motion to approve the recommendations regarding the amendment to Board Rule 7, sub G, 2, C passes. Thank you, Deborah. Moving on to item 5, we have letter A, retirement death claim and refunds for February 2026. Patrick, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the routine monthly list for payroll. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask them now, or you can also follow up with me after the meeting. Otherwise, a motion to approve is in order.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any, I will make the motion to approve payroll for February 2026. Is there a second?
Elliot, a second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve payroll February 2026 passes. Item 5, new business, letter B, conference request for March 25th, 2026 board meeting. We have three listed, and then I have one additional one to put on the record. First one is for Eric Sauer, Thomas Cartwright. They'll be doing the aptitude due diligence, Seattle, Washington. And second and the third of this year, it'd be $1,500 per person. Next is for David Silber, 2026 Neuberger Investment Leaders Summit and Private Market Annual Investors Meeting. This is sponsored by Neuberger Berman, New York, June 15th through the 17th of this year. Estimated cost is $2,400. Third is for Keith and Justin DeClean, the UBS due diligence and MFS meeting. That's in London. And that's June 27th to July 1st of 2026. Estimated cost is $3,750 per person. Finally, late addition, Bill Christensen reached out and requested attendance at the NPPERS Advanced Fiduciary Institute. It's a two-day put on by NPPERS, May 16th and 17th. That's in Las Vegas with a estimated cost of $2,200. I see reason to approve all four of these. Is there any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any, I'll make a motion to approve the conference requests for March 2026 board meeting. Do I have a second?
Four seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections? Not hearing any, motion to approve conference requests, the four of the three listed plus Mr. Christensen passes. Moving on to item 6, medical reports. Letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and re-examinations from March 6th. Just, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Bell and board. There are two reports before you today, medical panel approvals report and a medical council approvals report. Each consists of re-exams and are before you for approval as they're relatively routine for this month.
Thank you, Gust. Any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any, I'll make a motion to approve the medical reports for March 2026. Is there a second?
DeClean, a second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the medical reports for March 2026 passes. Thank you, Gust. Moving on to item 7, unfinished business. We have letter A, pending legal opinions and service requests report. Lori, are you on the line today?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I do not have anything.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm sorry. I do not have anything to report on this item, so unless there are any questions, that concludes my report on item A.
Great. I don't anticipate any, but I'll throw it out to the board, members and staff. It's there's a question. Thank you, Lori. Moving on then to item 7, letter B, pending legislation reports. And that will be handled by Mr. McLean or Ms. Rounds.
I'll handle that, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Pretty short comments. The two rule changes that are listed in both parts 2 and 3 were taken care of by the board just a moment ago. There's no change to the pending state legislation as of late last week when I last checked. So other than that, I don't have any additional comments, but if anyone has any questions, I'd certainly be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Thank you. Moving on to item 7, unfinished business, letter C, does allow us to go into closed session if needed. We will start an open session and decide if we need to go into closed. And go ahead, Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have quite a lengthy report on pending litigation this month because there has been quite a bit of activity since our last meeting. There will be some discussions of strategy and other issues, so I think it would be appropriate to consider these items in closed session.
Great, thank you, Lori. Let's get that done. I'll read the claim and then we'll move forward. Please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following items. 7, item C, as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub G, Wisconsin State Statutes, to confer with legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. I have a motion to go into closed session.
One more motion.
Thank you, John. Do I have a second?
Ellie, second.
Thank you, Tim. And a roll call, please, Jan.
Yes, Mr. Barmore.
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Quorum
and the time is 9:51 a.m. Hello.
Thank you.
A.m.
All right, good to go.
All right, thank you everyone. We're back in open session, 11:42 a.m. Moving on to item 7, letter D, the Executive Director's Report and Inventory of ERS Project. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and keep this brief. Section 1, Personnel Update. We are still looking to fill the Benefit Services Specialist position. The ERS received permission to fill that position from the Finance and Personnel Committee just last Friday. Moving on to Section 2, we had 57 new retirees on payroll in February. We had 33 retiree and employee deaths in January. Mike Juke held a general city workshop that had 43 in-person attendees and more online. Just for the board's benefit, I did talk to Mike about this, and you know, he indicated that attendance at these is still quite good, and he was very pleased with the amount of members who were showing up. So that's a good sign that we're getting member engagement, and you know, the more we can get out ahead of member issues and answering their questions, the smoother it is for them, and the smoother it helps us administer their benefits. So I was very pleased to see that. Annual statements will be going out by the end of March. There's a dedicated hotline set up for any members that have questions about those. Moving on to Section 3, Financial Services, the 2027 budget requests draft has been circulated, and we're continuing to work on that. The board can expect to see that at the upcoming meeting in April. Skipping ahead a little bit, one thing I did want to mention is that, you know, many thanks to Dan Gopalin for working on getting U.S. Bank's account validation services set up. This is an additional layer of essentially validation that ERS can now conduct whenever a member or retiree is registering a new bank account. It's so far, I've been hearing some fairly positive reports about it. This should allow staff to reduce both the risk of errors and of fraud related to ACH registration. So just another you know, example of how staff, particularly Dan and his team, are, you know, always have the protection of ERS members and their data at the top of mind, and this will be a great tool moving forward to assist in that regard. IT, Section 4, nothing to report. I talked to Jeff earlier this week. Everything is green and humming along. Nothing strange to report there, which is exactly what you want to hear. And then finally, the fifth section, Administration. The ERS building ended up closing on March 16th, 2026 due to the blizzard conditions. We did have a skeleton crew on site, but we essentially converted all operations to remote operations fairly successfully with no significant disruption to services to ERS members. There was only one in-person appointment, which was easily rescheduled to the following day. So staff was extremely nimble in adjusting to this. So to any of them who are listening, I really appreciate everybody's flexibility on that. And it went very smoothly. I was very pleased that given the late breaking developments with the weather, we were able to adjust so quickly. The only other thing I'll mention for administration is that the Hackham board has apparently selected a finalist candidate. They are beginning negotiations with that individual. The name of that person has not been announced, but that's an important step for this board, because once we get the leadership team reconstituted over there, we can begin having more thorough and in-depth discussions about how to approach Hackham's pension liability. They still face challenges, so even though they're, you know, narrowing down their executive director position, I believe they are still looking for a chief investment officer and chief operating officer. So there's still some work to go over there, but they're moving in the right direction. And I can tell you that we're excited to be able to have discussions with the new staff on how best to proceed. I've included the standard data for Hackham's outstanding contribution that I will continue including in the executive director's report until somebody tells me to stop or we have a resolution. And outside of that, we'll entertain any questions anyone has.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions, board members or staff?
Mr. Chair, I have two questions.
Go ahead, John.
Patrick, on the snowstorm and the snow day in the closed office, nice job on that. It's great that everybody's able to be productive and provide the services remotely. In relation to our more extreme events, we have the disaster recovery space up at Park Place with a long-term lease, and I won't mention the dollar amount or the number of years, but could that be reviewed by the A&O committee for appropriate size and scaling? That when that was set up, it was pre-COVID, pre-Zoom, pre-work from home, and is it still appropriate for the, we always need disaster recovery, but is the sizing appropriate?
Yeah, the answer to your question is yes, absolutely. I can work with we got the chair of the A&O committee here, Bill Christensen. I can work with him to work that in if he's amenable. I certainly think it's a fair question to raise. A redundant off-site office, I think, will always be a critical need of this organization, just for purposes of operational continuity in terms of, you know, emergency, like you said. But the scale of and cost of what that looks like is a fair question for the committee and board to review. So assuming the chair is amenable, that's certainly something we can put on the A&O committee to begin discussion of.
Yeah, and I'm certainly agreeable to that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And my second question is the Hackham issue. I hope they get a great person to be in the leadership and fill all their roles. I don't really care about that right today. They owe us $400,000. What's the current payment plan, especially in regards to the overdue $400,000?
Dan, do you have any update on that?
No.
I'll jump right ahead of Dan just very briefly. As I indicated at the last meeting, we are sending Hackham quarterly statements. They were doing fairly well on a prearranged payment schedule up until the end of last year, when they experienced some substantial cash flow problems due to the government shutdown. Essentially since that point, I don't believe they've been able to get them back on track. So certainly the plan is to establish, reestablish a repayment schedule with them. Unfortunately, the leadership void over there, I think, is preventing any meaningful discussion of that subject matter. But I'll certainly turn it over to Dan for any additional comments he might have.
Yeah, no, Patrick, yeah, I think you kind of summed it up pretty well.
Yeah, so the short answer is there's no current payment plan in place, and the reconstitution of their leadership is an important milestone that really has to occur before we can get anything, any serious plan into place, I'll put it that way.
Well, even if that's true, I think it would be prudent to really create the paper trail that we're asking them for that money like once a month or something instead of quarterly, because time goes by and it seems like we don't care about it.
If it's the preference of the board, we can certainly increase the pace of notices. You know, as this board knows, interest does accrue on late payments, so you know, any ultimate payment we receive will make the system whole, and Hackham has been made abundantly aware of that fact. Interest is included on all of the notices they receive. You know, I'd certainly be happy to send monthly statements if the board wants us to do that, but I'm not sure that's going to materially change the position between the system and Hackham. They're well aware of the problem. They're well aware that interest is accruing on the contributions. And you know, if there's an appetite for more frequent communication, we can certainly do so. I'd be happy to implement that.
I feel like it fulfills my fiduciary obligation to ask more often.
If that's the sentiment of the board, I'd be happy to do that.
This is Matt, I'd be fine with that as well. Any objections to that from anyone?
I could maybe send a couple of union guys over there.
No, it's we appreciate the direction, and we'll begin a monthly statement next month. The quarterly statement happens to be going out this month, this week. So it's actually a good time to implement the monthly statements. There'll be continuity on a monthly basis beginning essentially as of right now.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Anything else from board members or staff?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Rudy.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I'd like to let the board know that this is my last meeting. I asked Alderman, Council President Perez, to appoint someone in my place after 12 years. And so I'd like to thank really the leadership of BRS and the staff for laying the groundwork for us to do a good job. We really couldn't do the job at all without all of their help and assistance and support. And also thank the board members for taking all the time to sit on the board. I'm retired, so it's kind of easy for me. But for those who have work, especially some of our police and formerly fire members, I know it's a large burden for them. So thank you.
Well, Rudy, this is Matt. I've been told that this was going to be your last one, and I appreciate you mentioning something. I have thought about our time together and think about what you bring to this board year in and year out, and just your level of institutional knowledge, I'll say, from the years you've been around, and bringing things up from, I won't say, but the 80s and 90s when decisions were made, and being a part of those and being able to reference those. So it was always very comforting for me to know that you were part of the board and using your incredible knowledge and skill that you have to always bring up crucial questions and opinions, and that's always something I value tremendously. So thank you for your service. And I wish we had more time to possibly give you the honor that you deserved. But like I said, I didn't know that this was it, but thank you so much. Any other comments from board members?
I don't think we really should take the time for additional comments because this meeting has gone on quite a long time.
Rudy, there's time for additional comments. I want to say thank you to Rudy. He's a great man and a tremendous amount of service. Before Patrick, Miriam Horowitz, Beth Cleary, Lori, he was our city attorney to the pension board and did an outstanding job and has just been supportive and part of the team. And he's a great trustee. Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
I'll just add, this is Pat McLean. I thought we had you for one more month. We'll certainly get an item on the next agenda, but I just want to say very briefly, when you look at some of the most important legal opinions that are out there related to the retirement system, Rudy Conrad's name is at the bottom of them. So, you know, even though we're losing Rudy as a trustee, his mark on this system will live on long into the future. A lot of the stability of this fund and of the system itself is attributable to wise decisions that Rudy made 10, 20, 30 years ago. So Rudy, thank you very much for everything you've done. I've learned so much from you, and I wish you the best of luck moving forward.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could say too briefly at Rudy's request, I'll just say briefly, I can't speak with Patrick's expertise as a lawyer about Rudy's expertise as a lawyer, but as a board member, I've always been impressed at the questions he asks, and thank you for your years of service, both for the city and now in your retirement for the pension board. It's very appreciated. Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you. Well, I think I will now make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Thank you, Rudy. I just have to postpone that for 1 second. We just have item number 8 to run through quick. It's informational. It's letters A through G. If there's no questions or comments, we can put that on file. Any questions for that? Now, Rudy, I'd be happy to accept that motion. Go ahead, please.
I move to adjourn.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, John. And this meeting is adjourned at 11:58 a.m. Thanks, everyone.